Hey team, how's it going? Welcome to Basie Podcast episode 113. This week I was joined by Rose O'Donovan. Rose, who I've known for many, many years, is a fitness instructor. She teaches people how to be coaches. She teaches people how to be spin instructors. And she teaches people how to breathe properly, which is what we got her on the show to talk about this week. She is a Oxygen Advantage Master Instructor. Oxygen Advantage is a breathing method designed by Patrick McCohen. Rose and I discussed the science and the benefits of nasal breathing on your health and also your performance, and how Oxygen Advantage for anybody who's looking to improve any underlying health issues, anybody wanting to lose weight, anybody who struggles with sleep, or anybody looking to improve their performance. We also discussed why and when surgery would be an appropriate method, and how people get told they need surgery and a lot of time it could be avoided, and why breathing is not a common prescription when people do have these issues. It was a really interesting conversation, and Rose knows a hell of a lot about nasal breathing. She's very good at what she does. I would definitely recommend people check Rose out, and definitely recommend the Oxygen Advantage masterclasses that Rose hosts. But we talk all about that in the show. If you do have any questions, feel free to get in touch with Rose or myself if you have any questions about implementing some nasal breathing with your training. Before we get into the show, just a reminder that we have launched our Rise training program at Base3. This is for anybody looking to get more competitive in the sport of fitness. Anybody wants to learn to walk on their hands, do muscle ups, do cool stuff with barbells whilst they're tired, wants to push themselves a little bit harder, be a bit more competitive in the sport of fitness, but only has an hour a day to do it. If you are interested in any of those things, please give me a shout. Without further ado, episode 113 with Rose O'Donovan. What's going on, guys? Welcome to Base3 Podcast episode 113. I'm here with Rose O'Donovan. How are you doing, Rose?
I'm good, thanks, Craig. How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. Let's quickly, before we get into what we're going to talk about today, talk about how we know each other, because we go quite far back, which is always fun. I always pull people on that people I've known for years and years and years, which is, I think, one of the cool things about being in Dubai is you get to meet a lot of people and a lot of different people that you can kind of call on to have these conversations with.
Yeah, we stood the test of time in Dubai, I think.
Absolutely. Well, we're just saying it's 8 years we met.
I'm here 10 years, and I think I must have worked with you 8 or 9 years ago.
B2B.
B2B Fitness.
Back in the day.
Yep.
One of the original ones.
That was in the time when there was no gyms here, no labs.
No
regulations.
No fancy fitness facilities. No.
Nothing. Yeah. There was not even the first CrossFit center.
There wasn't even the barbell. You couldn't even get Olympic barbells here. It was crazy.
And there definitely wasn't anything on breathing.
No, definitely not. And that's what we're here to speak with Rose about today. So a couple of weeks ago, I went and did an Oxygen Advantage Masterclass. Is that what you call it? Masterclass?
Yep.
That was what it is. With Rose. And I let Rose explain to you what Oxygen Advantage is. I read the book, very interested, saw it popped up on Rose's Instagram. I was like, I have to go and do this. This sounds incredible. I'm going to go do this. And and then I was like, Rose, we've got to get on the podcast because this stuff is fascinating. So here we are. Rose, why don't you start with what it is you do and how is it you've got to what you do, and then we'll get into the Oxygen Advantage stuff.
Okay. First of all, thanks for having me on the podcast. It's always an honor. And I'm nervous. It's like every time I get asked to speak about these things, I'm like, that Irish Catholic comes in and I'm like, I don't know anything. Why did you ask me to talk? So thank you for having me. And I do remember when we worked together 8 years ago, I admired your professionalism and you were really admired in the industry. So it's always great when individuals come back and we're like, wow, we're still here after 8 to 10 years and you've kind of gone to, you know, the top of your game. After the time we worked together, I would have went into a lot more educational experience in the health and fitness industry.
Okay.
I had started working in education in Ireland before I came out here. And I taught a lot of certifications and qualifications for level 2, level 3, so personal trainers coming into the industry, anatomy for Pilates, and then obviously I'm a master instructor for spinning and for spin power, and I'll talk about spinning in a moment. And through all of that, you know, there was a lot of stuff that went on where I did directly see breathing as an issue. It was a major issue in my own health. I was an open mouth breather, so I am truly behind this this method. And I had also, and I've been honest about this in a previous podcast I did for Matt Marnie Fitness, who he's probably going to ask you to come on his podcast.
Oh, really?
I had a 3-year amenorrhea from overtraining and the wrong nutritional protocols. And amenorrhea, for your listeners, is a lack of a menstrual cycle.
Yep.
So once you start interfering with digestion and hormones, your brainstem and your breathing system and CV system in your body is going to be superbly unhealthy. So I had to find ways to fix that. And through some courses I was doing with Body Hack, that's the education company I work for, somebody held up that book one day and I read it, The Oxygen Advantage by Patrick. And it changed the way I thought, the way I lived, and I didn't have enough information, just the same way as you didn't. And found someone in Ireland, they mentioned this masterclass, and I was like, wow, this education is available. So I ended up going to Romania, Poland, and I went to the Netherlands. So I've been to Patrick twice and to one of his master instructors a third time. So I had taken the course three times, and like I said to you on our class, I said, even though I've done that for a couple of years, I still feel like I know like this much about breathing.
Sure.
And that's how it all started, and it revolutionized the way I taught, the way I trained clients, the way I navigated stress in people, and both from people who are dysfunctional and would have things like breathing pattern disorders or panic disorders, all the way up to athletes who just want to get better at buffering capacity in their body.
Which was the appeal to me is, so I read the book. I still haven't finished it, by the way. I read half the book and I got to the point where I was like, this is very overwhelming and I need to slow down and understand it and then continue through it. So the course was really good because that went through some of the exercises that I hadn't got to in the book yet. So to understand those better. What would you say, the reason I got into or was so interested was for the performance aspect. I didn't understand or realize there was so many just health and kind of wellness benefits as well, which seems to be more beneficial than some of the performance stuff. So you said you got into it for health.
I got into it for health, and then I loved the performance side. Definitely got into it for health. Probably misconceived that I can get into this for performance, and when I did that I was like, wow, I'm not actually all that healthy in my breathing.
Yeah.
Which transfers into a lot of athletes or people who exercise or train a lot. We have a great tolerance for pain and we think we are quite good, but when we really look at the breathing function in the body, we're not actually that great at all. So I had to go to the health side of it first.
Solve that stuff, figure that stuff out, and then you can start addressing the performance stuff. I was shocked when I did the first bolt test. I read the bolt test and I was listening to what the kind of metrics were for dysfunctional, functional, and then it was like, if you're at this level, you're allowed to go walking. And I was like less than that level. So I've been doing very high intensity training for 20 years now. So for me, it was a bit of a shock to be like, oh my God, my capacity for breathing is way under what I am actually doing in the gym. And I'm sure a lot of people would fare the same way, do the bolt test. And I feel like I did the bolt test very properly. I feel like a lot of people I've tried to give it to, like, yeah, I did 40 seconds, it was easy. I was just like, we probably didn't do it right. But it's hard to tell someone that done it wrong without seeing them do it.
Yeah.
Would you say to people that have come in, we'll discuss the bolt score in a second, but would you say people come to you with a really low bolt score should pull their training back?
They do need to pull training back, but what they can do, if they're willing to put in some time and effort to correcting lifestyle and putting protocols in place to make breathing work.
Yeah.
And believe you me, I'm like all for make it fit your lifestyle.
Yep.
I am not stopping for 40 minutes a day to practice breathing. I need to make it work for me. So the BOLT score, for those listening, it's the body oxygen level test.
Yeah, we should have done that first, probably. Start with that.
Yeah, we could have done that. We covered this in the masterclass anyway, and for people who go to base 3, if Craig is doing it, you should, you know, listen to him. And you were great. The last course we ran, there was you and
Keith
O'Malley Farrell, and it was brilliant to have two people who would actually listen and execute the exercises in the right way, and you were on board with the science behind it. And the BOLT test, while it's a subjective test and a submaximal, it does look at the phrenic nerve in the diaphragm, which goes to the brainstem. And the word phrenic is a Greek word, if I remember correctly, and phren is root. So the root of that nerve goes to your brainstem, and they're not separate, they are connected. So it's like a messaging system from the brainstem, and we say the message goes to the medulla, And the brainstem and the medulla in the brain takes care of your respiratory system, your cardiovascular function, and your breathing rate, and when you should breathe. So that little kick that we're asking you to feel, it's real. It's not, you know, it's this is why people holding up for the 40 seconds. We know that it's not correct, and that we can see things like right in the Adam's apple,
yeah.
Or the diaphragm. We can physically see that in people, or that you will feel it. And that's, you know, that's your first sign to take a breath. And when you take a breath, you resume normal breathing. And that's what a submaximal test is.
Yeah. And that's that kind of contraction you feel, yeah, when you're like,
yeah,
when you're struggling,
yeah,
for it.
And it shouldn't even be that big. It should be
in
just
the bulk,
yeah,
test, it shouldn't, yeah.
And this is all about ego. It's like, just let go. We've, you know, the more correct we can get a test, the better the results we're going to get from your
100%,
training.
100%. Like, yeah, real-time information on this is what you're currently capable of without trying to, like, push so far and get a good score.
Exactly.
For the sake of having an accurate score for a better response or a better indication of what you're actually capable of.
Yeah, and I want to pick up on one thing. So Craig said, I've been doing high-intensity training for 20 years. So with that, it's like that statement alone, you've put a lot of pressure on your body.
Yeah.
And a lot of stress.
Yeah, that's one thing you pointed out as well.
Yeah. So, and you know, there's that concept, well, I should be able to do this. I've been putting myself under pressure, and why isn't my body adapting?
Yep.
Why haven't I adapted? But there's over-adaptation. So people who are generally doing too much exercise or have a lot, I remember testing a cyclist, and she is phenomenal, and it was like 6-7 seconds.
Yeah.
She couldn't hold her breath, and she snored. But her tolerance for pain is massive.
Right.
So because she can train that hard.
Yep.
It doesn't mean there. What really happens is you do not recover well.
Yep.
So your time as an athlete is going to be limited, and your internal health of like blood and blood plasma, and how you react to stress. This is where the, you know, the key science is, that this is what you're doing to your body. So when you said, I've been doing intense exercise, but my bolt was low, this is really common.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I figured it would be. And it wasn't I did it not thinking, oh, it should be higher. I did it and realized it's just like, ah, you need to address this and kind of get this up to the level of like your relative to your fitness was my takeaway from that. And I was like, I really need to address this. And I did it this morning, it was 15 seconds still, but we're working on it.
Working on it, good.
On the masterclass, we'll dip back into performance in a second because I think that's what these guys will find most interesting. But the one thing that really blew my mind on the masterclass was the triangle, mm-hmm, of the correlation between sleep, breathing, and emotion, and how the thing that made a lot of sense was if you go to a doctor for a sleep issue, they won't address your breathing or your emotional, mm-hmm, state. And likewise, if you went to a doctor to see someone about depression or anxiety, they wouldn't look at your breathing patterns or your sleep, mm-hmm, patterns. And then as soon as you started talking about it, everything clicked. I was just like, well, yeah, of course that's related to this and all these things are related. Could you explain to us kind of what that triangle is and how that works and why that's so important?
So if you're listening and you draw a triangle, and the pillars can go at any point in the triangle, and we have breathing at the top, and we have emotions on the left side, and we have sleep on the right side. So when we talk about emotions, we're looking at racing mind, anxiety, depression, you know, for the major emotions, joy, fear, sadness. And then if we come over to sleep, this is going to affect cognitive performance. So how you perform in the workplace and things like burnout. You know, burnout is a massive issue in workplaces under the age of 40 in the corporate world. And we also have physical performance,
yeah,
with sleep. And then breathing is at the top. And how do we breathe, and how sensitive are we to carbon dioxide? So the baroreceptors in the body, how slow or fast our breathing is. And it's very easy. Well, you know, for me, I think it's easy. I can meet somebody and literally assess their breathing right in front of me, or I can hear it. We should not hear someone breathing except in intense physical exercise.
Yeah.
And when we talk about performance, we'll talk about, okay, when you should be nasal breathing, when you should be mouth breathing. But those three pillars are, they're really interrelated. And just like you said, we've got people going to psychologists and psychiatrists, and unfortunately in this country, psychiatry is a massive business and they write prescriptions readily.
Mm.
And I have like example of concrete evidence of that.
Yeah.
And at any one time, they have not said, how do you breathe? Do you do any breathing work, or do you practice exercise? Do you expose yourself to sunlight at the right times? How is your circadian rhythm? none of that. It's just, you know, write the prescription and there's a lot of money exchanged for that. Or if they're going for psychology, it's like, is the psychologist backing it up with how is your lifestyle? How do you sleep and how do you breathe? And like you said, if somebody has gone, goes to a doctor for sleep issues, which is generally sleep apnea or snoring or exhaustion, just pure exhaustion, they are mainly offered surgery. And the
I want to get into that.
The, you know, the inside of the nose is the tissue is erectile tissue, so it's the same as your genitals. So if we start interfering with something like that, it's, you know, this is, it's huge. So can, have they looked at any other possibility before surgery or medications? Have, you know, the lifestyle interventions. And then if we come down to the other one, so we'd sleep and breathing, none of them seem to be interrelated in the right way. Or if it's, you know, even if we take people who are grossly overweight or obese, and I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said grossly overweight, but if they've got, you know, chronic weight issues, they will be offered surgery. They will be offered Saxenda injections. They will be offered, you know, any intervention before they say, how are these other pillars working right now? And I know from my own, you know, I've been in this industry for so long and my own health journey, unless I was really focused on these three pillars without, you know, allowing another intervention like a medication or a surgery, it's not possible to have good health. And it's easy to have good health. It's like, this is free for all. We're not talking rocket science. This is the willingness to stop and slow down.
Or you're not talking about measures that are so extreme or expensive that everyone can't, doesn't have access to them if they're willing to put the effort into
it. We have access to this.
That's like the Matthew Walker book. It talks about the most powerful drug or whatever, whatever.
Is that How We Sleep?
How We Sleep,
I love that book. Yeah, and it's amazing.
So good. And he, and that's what he said. It's the most powerful health remedy known to us, and it's free for everybody at all times, and it's just sleep. So again,
so breathing and sleep, they are, you know, when you say that to a client, and PT is my business and training personal trainers, because I'm on social media, everyone just sees a spinning and they think I'm a cardio queen, and it's not true at all. But when, you know, when we say sleep and breathing, and they're like, nah, that's a bit boring. Like, you know, have you got another answer? They either want more pain, or they want something that's going to, you know, that's shinier. You know, it's like they want something more novel. And it's like, no, this is it.
And until you, it's like anything, right? It's the basics of, if you are in the gym, you're not going to load up 200 kilos on your back squat unless you can squat properly. And it's same thing, is you don't need to be addressing sophisticated training methods if you're not sleeping properly, you're not breathing properly. I think breathing's really underrated. It's cool that it's been become more popular recently, and it's a more of a fitness thing, and there's a lot of people pushing it and talking about it. It's become more popular, which is really cool. And there's a do you listen to much of the Brian McKenzie stuff?
I do, and he's great. I'm not a huge amount because I listen to a lot of stuff, but he's good.
So he was, and he put it in a way as like, it's the only thing you do, or whatever it is, 26,000 times a day involuntarily. Like, your body just does it 26,000 times a day. Like, how, why are people not addressing it more or taking it more seriously? Because it is just something that's so important to us, and it's something that has such a big benefit if you start paying more attention to it, and it's so easy to do. Like, if you look, start looking at that, I've got it right here, I use it a lot, the manual of all the exercises is the first one, the entry is 2.5 minutes a day of just real simple breath holds and nasal holds. What would be the steps for someone to start getting into this? Where would you, what would be the entry point is if someone wants to start working with this stuff, and everybody should, but
they have to assess their health, like take a real serious look at their health. I know, because we're exposed to people every day, Craig, and when you see people with their mouths open and their heads, neck in extension,
that must kill you.
Oh man,
because it bothers me now.
I loved your podcast with Keith, because you said, what did you describe the spinning instructor as a cheerleader on a bike, and it's like, it's the last thing you'll find me doing. It's like, I will not cheerlead. It's like, when I look at rows of people and the neck is extended and the airways are open, and then we have, you know, there's no nitric oxide going into the system when that's happening. So to address it, people need to really have a look at themselves. So I would always say, can you hear your breathing? How fast they're breathing? And now, if somebody is a mouth breather and they're over breathing, they're not necessarily going to be aware of it, because most likely they already have an anxious mind, an racing mind, and there's either depression or anxiety there. And it doesn't have to be clinical. You can be, and you know, I don't like people to attach to terminology. I have anxiety. You know, somebody recently said I have clinical anxiety, and it's like somebody with a slip disc in their back, or I've got, you know, that disc will be there for the next 10 years. You know, how people attach to their injuries.
Yeah.
So the best thing about breathing pattern disorders is they are disorders and not diseases, and they can be rectified.
Yeah.
So we can, a disorder is something that can be changed. So if they're willing to assess, and you know, willingness is the key, if they're willing to look at it, to check how they sleep, you know, if they're waking up at nighttime with an open, dry mouth, if they snore, and if they're snoring, it's a major, major issue. It's, you know, I don't know how people can continually ignore the fact that they snore. Because when you snore, you have a direct lack of oxygen to the brain. So you're going to wake up exhausted. And the studies correlate with this. They correlate to cognitive decline, erectile dysfunction, and so on, and so on, and so on.
Em will say that I snore. I don't think I do, but Em will say that.
Okay, I'll have a chat with her.
I've got the app that records your sleep cycle, that records your sleep, and it always comes up. It tells you when you were snoring. And it's usually her. Yeah.
She's snoring.
Well, it says I'm snoring.
Here's Greg on the podcast saying his wife is snoring.
I'm sure it's not me.
Yeah, wasn't me. So people need to assess. And then also, so they can assess sleep and then assess exercise. And most people hate exercise. So when I say most, like general population, hate training, hate cardiovascular training. They hate the feeling of breathlessness because their body can't tolerate carbon dioxide.
Mm-hmm.
And just before we move on to really just put science behind what we're speaking about, I work with the Oxygen Advantage Method, which you've mentioned already. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the basic principle is the Bohr effect.
Yep.
And hopefully I'll get this right. If we overbreathe, we have an increase of oxygen. Carbon dioxide goes down.
Yep.
Blood pH goes up.
Mm-hmm.
And the hemoglobin is going to bind to the oxygen in the body, so it will not release to the cells. This is overbreathing, where we're hyperventilating, breathing too much, open mouth, lots and lots of breath. That's overbreathing. If we have regular, normal, or slow breathing, we will have less oxygen going in, carbon dioxide is rising, blood pH is dropping, and now the hemoglobin will release the oxygen to the tissues and cells. So there's a greater affinity for it to release. So then we can start oxygenating the body.
Yep.
So when people say, take deep breaths, this is a really, you know, berated cue that should be wiped out of industry. Take a big deep breath.
Yeah.
And it should be take a long exhalation. I take a slow breath
slow
and a deeper breath.
Right? Breath. Yeah.
Slow breath, deeper breath, nasal breath. And once we get your baroreceptors more sensitive or more acclimated to carbon dioxide in the body, your blood, the hemoglobin, which binds to oxygen, will have a better chance of releasing to the tissues and the cells. And that's what actually gives us the feeling of calmness. So yes, there is a little bit of panic with the air hunger, but you will have that because you're overbreathing.
Mm.
And then if people are listening, they'll probably be thinking, oh, but what about the Wim Hof method and all the stuff that's out there? And, you know, there's holotropic, there's Wim Hof, there's everything is there. And they are methods that are not to be discounted. They all have a place. But we are talking about people who have health issues. And we always go back to that, the three pillars, mm-hmm. the breathing, the sleeping, and the emotions. If you don't have regular functional breathing, if you haven't got good healthy breathing, then you can't start a program that's going to
like an advanced breathing method.
Yeah, yeah. Really advanced, that will really adapt the system. The system adapts because of the stress.
Yeah.
So we really stress the system with holotropic or Wim Hof,
right.
And then the body adapts back to homeostasis.
Got you.
That's what those methods are.
Yeah.
I've had people who are extremely unhealthy. Oh, I'm going down this route, and I'm like, okay, off you go.
Yeah.
See you soon.
That's like all the people that come here overweight and want to go to the CrossFit Games. So, well, let's look at basics first.
Yeah, it's like, it's pull the ego back, start with the basics. So even for myself, I know as soon as I'm overbreathing, if I've had to talk too much, if I'm
like
near
I'm
my cycle,
I'm
like, how much time have we got? We've got all this information to get out. So I will pull it back and do the basic exercises to regulate my own breathing. And that's a daily practice. It's not, it's just like your diet.
Yep.
We don't come off the diet. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. The overbreathing thing was really interesting to me. And when I first read that in the book, and like excessive mouth breathing, and then what you just explained about the overbreathing versus underbreathing and the Bohr effect, now I can't not see it when people exercise. And I've so if you're in the gym and I tell you to shut your mouth, it's because you're breathing through your mouth, and it's not because I'm telling you to shut up. But you know who I'm talking about. There's a couple of people that I'll happily tell them to shut their mouth, and they know who they are as well.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, and it looks, you know, it looks the part, right? You come into a gym, especially a CrossFit center, or, you know, where even when we teach cycling with a power meter and we've got stats up on the board, people love to open their mouth and look like they're in pain. It adds to the whole visual of like, how hard I'm working.
Well, it is that, but it's funny because then now I don't know if it's just me, but I feel like those people are less, it's less impressive because you're just not as fit. Because you can't hold your breath. So now it's like someone who is closed mouth, holding their breathing, but still working at the same output as everyone else. I'm like, you're working a lot harder.
Yeah, and look how attractive they look. If we look at athletes crossing a line or any of the big CrossFit athletes, they have regulated their breath to do that amount of work.
Yeah.
And we should only have our mouth open when we're at maximal capacity. But if we look at true athletes, they are graceful, they're elegant, and they are good breathers.
Yeah.
For the most part. Some athletes are mouths closed. Mouths closed.
What about, and I read this and I listened to this in the book, and it made a lot of sense, and it was talking about work and, like you said, talking, or people have to like lecture or teach classes and have their mouth open for work. And then it was size as well, like constant size. And it's like, and obviously that's the same thing. That's a breath out is someone who sighs a lot.
Yeah.
Is we get a lot of people who exercise and grunt and when they're exercising. That's the same thing.
Yes. What we don't really talk too much about, and it's something that I'm beginning to explore hugely, is, you know, biomechanics and the muscular structure around rib cage. And we discussed this in the course, like compression with weightlifting and stuff like that. But dysfunctional breathing in general, you'll have a lot of sighing, even at rest. It sounds like, I used to breathe like that regularly. It's many years since that, but I remember I was like, and it would come out of nowhere. It was my autonomic nervous system just, and if I hear someone doing that today, this is poor. This is really poor. That's irregular sighing. Yawning and pendiculation is okay. You know, the dog stretch or the cat stretch, that's actually very good for your body. But the irregular sighing and the inability to keep that functional slow breathing is that's poor. It's like, yes, you need to look at that. And if they don't, what happens long term is you're looking at weight gain, inflammation. There are 200 chronic diseases linked to breathing.
Wow.
And I mean, this is like, it's a lifestyle factor. Yeah. So that's why are the medical board not, why the medical profession's not on board. And Patrick was in Spain, and he had to give a workshop or a lecture to a group of ENT doctors.
Okay.
And he talks about it in one of his interviews, and he's like, maybe I should just get out of here, because, you know, they're not on board with this whole concept of nitric oxide. And when we, breath hold, when we breathe through our nose, what happens? And, you know, if you're listening, just pinch your nose and hold it for 10 seconds and repeat it 3 or 4 times, and you'll start to feel the tissues.
Yeah.
Really wake up, and they actually get they start to feel much better.
Yeah. And that's when you get the runny nose.
The runny nose and nitric oxide, and using your nasal cavity, it's a vasodilator. So we start to open up the airways, which is the nose, the throat, and all the way down to the lungs, instead of being a constrictor. So if anyone's not convinced yet, just open your mouth and take a few breaths, and you see how constricting it is and how drying it is. I think it's 40% dehydration happens with mouth breathing. As opposed to nasal breathing, where, you know, it humidifies the air going in. It acts as an antiviral property. So even with COVID, I was never really, of course, I'm afraid, but, you know, I would hold my breath or make sure I'm breathing primarily all the time through my nose, especially when I was around other people, when we had that real fear factor here.
Yeah.
You know, this is if people had their mouths open, this is where you pick up your disease.
So that's another reason to nasal breathe as well.
Yeah. There's hundreds of reasons out there. It was really interesting. The nitric oxide thing is fascinating. Before I came here, I did an experiment, and I Googled nitric oxide because I remember you said to me, I want to talk about sleep. So I asked Google to show me the symptoms of low nitric oxide. So it was fatigue or low energy levels. And I'm reading this from something I saved. High blood pressure or decreased heart rate function.
Okay.
Anxiety, irritability or depression, insomnia and other sleep problems, loss of libido, sex drive or erectile dysfunction. So this is what we have if we don't have nitric oxide. Okay.
And they're all things you'd associate with people who don't sleep well.
Well, poor sleep. yeah. mouth breathers, yeah. Breathing pattern disorders. Then when I asked Google to show me five ways to increase, it said eat vegetables high in nitrates.
Beetroot.
Increase your intake of antioxidants. Use nitric oxide boosting supplements. Limit your use of mouthwash and get your blood flowing with exercise. So nowhere did it say
breathing.
Nasal breathe.
Oh, wow.
Breathe through your nose.
Why is that then? Is that just people that...
You know, and it's like if we're general population and they don't know, remember what it was like when you didn't know anything about anything and you know, we listened to people who said don't eat carbs. So if somebody looks that up, they'll start buying all these supplements and eating beetroot and they're still breathing through their mouth and it's like this stuff is free.
I said this to someone the other day and they thought I was joking. They were asking if I... did I have any pre-workout? I said no, but just do a couple breath holds beforehand. Do like 2 minutes of breath holds beforehand, and they thought I was taking the piss. They thought it was a joke, but
yeah, people are slow to get on board. And if they're not willing to come to the water, it's like usually I will show them. If they don't believe me, I'll do something where they really get the concept of it. If they're not on board, then I'm just like, you go and come back to me when you're in enough pain.
For sure.
I have couple of clients that will not get, they will get on board for a little bit and then they won't obey the rest of the time and their health is poor. Mm. You know, their health is poor and if people choose to stay there, you know, we can't change them. I'm there for people who want to change.
100%.
I've been in the industry long enough that I have I'm pretty lucky. I can say, okay, whoever I want will work with me, and if you're not ready, then you need to like go off somewhere else.
And that's such a common pattern you see with people. It's like, oh, I want to lose weight, but they won't track their food or change their habits. So same here.
And if someone does want to lose weight, then you need to look at breathing.
Yeah.
And the way this works is if someone is overweight, it is, you know, if you look at the ACE questionnaire, it's a fantastic questionnaire that should be given to every individual that goes to a medical practitioner for a weight problem. And the ACE questionnaire shows basically on childhood trauma, mm-hmm. And how traumatic their upbringing is and the score. And then the studies that are correlate to this is that they will have major health problems, and weight and obesity is one of them.
Oh, wow.
So if they look at that questionnaire, but as I was saying, the way this works, it's not necessarily that they don't have the education around the food. They don't have the education around the behavior.
Mm.
If they're not breathing well, they're not behaving well, and they're not sleeping well. So, you know, if you've had a poor night's sleep or you stayed out too late the next day, we are more prone to eat more, energy's low. But you're going to make better cognitive decisions in every area of your life if your breathing is better.
That's one of the concepts in the Matthew Walker book as well, is people who work shift work tend to make poorer decisions around food choices as well.
Yes.
So I guess that's related as well. Huh.
Yeah. Shift work is major because the circadian rhythm is disrupted hugely.
Yeah, for sure.
You can do that for a while, but you can't do that long term. That's why, you know, flight crew, their lifespan is 7 years or working lifespan. Yeah.
Yeah. Moving into more performance-based training, how can we start to implement this? So that was a really good overview of how it's useful and how to start and how it applies to general health and wellness. If we were starting trying to use this as a performance enhancer, like in the gym or with sports teams, is how would we start incorporating this into training? Something that you said in the course is using the softer holds pre and the more aggressive holds post training. How would you start incorporating some of the practices and drills into
with a place like yours? It's really great because you've got regular members. And then if anyone was listening and they say, how can I even assess my breathing? You can go to Craig or Keith because they're, you know, you've got two businesses now. So the more people that know this method, the more people can actually go and say, you know, do a bowl score on me and check how it is. If you're training, there are so many methods that you can start using. So, So warming up, you do want to stress the body quite a bit because you're preparing for, you know, you're preparing the body and the tissues for what's going to happen, especially the breathing system. So you can do the regulation, one of the smaller, shorter breath holds, and then a couple of stronger ones in your warm up.
Okay.
Depending on what you've programmed, but I like people to, you know, in aerobic and anaerobic training, there's a threshold line.
Yep.
And your aerobic capacity, you should be able to nasal breathe up to 87-90%. So using things like the turbines and opening up the nasal cavities, if you've got long blocks of work, most of the work should be done with nasal breathing anyway.
Yes.
And then once, if you get your members up to functional breathing, you know, 25 to 30 seconds of a bolt, or they start to really regulate. And at the end, you know, the best way for you, Craig, I guess, in your classes, put in a 10-minute block at the end and you do a slow breathing practice with them and you make them do it. And you can employ stuff like the ribcage movement so they're getting more biomechanics. And that will actually have an effect because you're doing the work for them because they're there in the class. And then hopefully later on when the bolt is increasing, you can start doing stuff like the sprint repeatability exercise, which was the five.
The last one we did at the end.
And what we, I think what we didn't get round to explaining when we did that with you is the spleen is a blood bank in the body. And that was quite painful, right?
Yeah, that was really hard, that one.
Yeah, it's really hard. It's basically 5 40-meter sprints with a limited recovery of 30 seconds and your nasal, you've got your nasal cavity blocked or breath held. So you do that 5 times. The spleen is your blood bank and that will release red blood cells and it's also linked to increasing EPO in the body. If we do that in Tuesday or Wednesday, we're going to have an increase of red blood cells maybe Friday or Saturday.
Okay.
So, you know, if we're really working with teams, then we start to program, okay, so your match is blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, sadly do that 2 days before.
We'd also do stuff like taping the mouths towards the end of the workout.
Okay.
Because matches and games are won in the last 10 minutes. So you might, you know, get people doing their enom or whatever you set, whatever the metcon is. I don't know all the terms in CrossFit, but you might do the last 5 or 10 minutes with their mouth taped. And this is when they are, you know, they're pretty good at breathing.
Okay.
I have a client at the moment. She's won a Keat. She's doing Kilimanjaro. She doesn't know it's coming, but I'm going to use the turbine and get her to actually nasal breathe. And I did a lot of this in lockdown because, you know, we'd gone into lockdown, everywhere shut down.
Yeah.
Hardly any training, but by the time I got a bike and had my own training set up, I'd suffered. My fitness went way down.
Okay.
Stress was way up. Yeah. And then I started like really, really long blocks of loaded work.
Yep.
Nasal breathing only, and your nose will fall out of you. It gets really runny and it's as good. It's good if it's clearing out. It's good. Somebody called me from Ireland the other day and they said, oh, I've gone back running, my nose is beginning to clear out, I can't stop it. And I was like, just let it clear out, because if you're just starting back, and he said the nasal breathing's all good, but he said this is really congested, and I was like, let it come out, it's congested.
Okay.
It's like if you do the MBT, the maximum breath hold test.
Yep.
We use that as a nasal unblocking exercise.
Okay.
And it's a good sign if you do something like a nasal unblocking exercise and it clears out, then there's congestion there.
Yeah.
Because the Cottle maneuver, if you're listening, take your two fingers just above the nostrils and pull the cheeks away. Does that sound like a decent explanation?
Yeah.
This is when you breathe, if that feels easier.
Yeah, definitely does.
Yeah.
There's definitely a difference there.
But so Patrick always says, you know, if somebody, if you can improve with the Cottle maneuver, most likely you don't need surgery.
So it's the Cotton
maneuver. Cottle maneuver. And if somebody can breathe through their nose for a minute, they can breathe through their nose for a lifetime. So that's another way of assessing somebody who's, you know, they've gone somewhere and they say, oh, I need surgery. My nose has been closed forever. It's like, it's going to be closed if you're not using it.
So in the gym, I know 3 people that have been told they need deviated septum?
Deviated septum,
So they've been told there's excess skin or there's whatever, then they need surgery.
Mm.
So do this Cottle test, and if it improves, then there's probably a chance that they can
They'd need a lot of other work. So in one of the books I use, they have questionnaires or they have assessments where, okay, in this case, you may need surgery or you may need other medical interventions. So obviously I'm not a doctor, so I can't tell anyone you can't do this.
Yeah.
But I will say, have you explored other options? Mm. Because I don't want to discredit the medical professional, because, you know, they are incredible at what they do. However, it's like with something like a lifestyle disease, when it's, you know, when it is breathing or obesity, do we need to operate here? Or have you actually tried to, you know, be better in yourself? So with somebody who's deviated septum, a Cottle maneuver, try using your nose. Mm. If you're not using it, you lose it. That principle of basic exercise. So they'll need to use it more, which means they're going to have to work and they'll have to look at opening it up. And, you know, that's where you start to really use a lot of of the exercises you did on your course, mm-hmm. and then the tools, you know, nasal strips, turbines, the mask.
One thing that you said on the course, which is another eye-opener, was all the tools that people have to put in the mouth.
Yeah.
And at first you said it's like they don't work, and I was like, oh, is she being biased here? And
then you said on your podcast she's plugging her own shit.
I was like, is she just trying to upsell the mask here? And then you, as soon as you said,
I don't make a penny
from these. The second you put it in your mouth, I was just like, of course you're encouraging mouth breathing, so of course it's not going to work. And you see all these breath training tools that I'm sure there's a purpose. I'm sure they have some benefit to improving whatever they claim to benefit. But if you're trying to train to get better at mouth breathing, you're not getting better at nasal breathing.
Yeah, and even with all the tools, we can take them all away, bar the tape. The tape is something I'm attached to. And we can do everything we're doing without the tools. Yeah. It's really nice to, you know, we're in the 20th century or whatever, and it's nice to have all these tools. But I always say to everyone, you can do everything without, you know, if you don't have to have the mask, you don't have to have the turbine. I do find that really good. But Patrick doesn't even make money on his masks. He got someone to design it, and it's really nice that it's super cheap. But when we put something into our mouth, and, you know, if you're listening, try again. The, like, sucking air into your mouth, you only use your upper respiratory muscles if you breathe using your diaphragm and your nose, because the nose is going to employ the diaphragm automatically.
Yeah.
You're using more of the lower respiratory, not necessarily belly, because, you know, your belly doesn't push out when you breathe, but your diaphragm goes down and the rib cage opens. So with all those tools, they are important. And if you have other tools and you're listening, have a think. Like, we seem to take things at people's word. It's like, actually ask, what does this do? How is it doing it?
Yeah.
And if you take your tongue and bring it across the roof of your mouth, all the way back to the soft palate, that's the base of your nose. So this is why we're breathing, to increase nitric oxide, to open the airways, to open up the lungs, dehumidify the air, to increase or to bring the temperature up, and to have antiviral properties. None of that happens when we're using our mouth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go. If that doesn't convince you to start breathing
more
through
your
nose.
It's like, come on, what else do you want? And erectile dysfunction. It's like, come on, you know, guys. Sex cells. With nitric oxide, it's really linked. And anyone who is mouth breathing, you know, and they're prone to anxiety, they will probably have erectile dysfunction.
Okay.
Most likely, it's because if you've mouth breathing, you're a poor sleeper. So there is like this vicious circle. And then in females, you'll have really poor hormonal control. Their PMS, like, we naturally increase our respiration rate prior to our menses, which means our training has to be regulated to, you know, a lesser level or whatever. But if a female is primarily mouth breather, they will be exhausted, they will have inflammation, they start to gain, you'll see weight gain, you know, in all those places that they don't want it.
You mentioned this a bit on the class as well, is your Bolt score will adjust in as you go through your monthly cycle.
Yes.
It will adjust on different, why is that?
Because I feel like an Olympic athlete week one. It's like, it's to do with progesterone and estrogen in the body. And it's literally like, you know, females will all be nodding if they're listening to this. It's like that third week, that week before we start our menses and menstruation. It's like, you know, I've had clients come in and they're like, they think their life is over. All the training's been a waste.
Yep.
You know, we literally feel like another person. It's like your capacity goes way down. So you have to change the training program. And honestly, once menstruation has started, and I'll notice it really hugely with how I breathe when I swim, because I use that as a recovery tool, and I'll be suffocating and drowning in the pool. And, you know, after, once my menstruation has started, and then you have progesterone and estrogen regulated in the body, respiration is, the rate is lowered. Baroreceptors are increased in the body, and I start to breathe way better.
Okay.
It's just stress. You know, stress goes up. Obviously, the female body is getting ready to release the lining of the womb. It's like it's a major concern for us. That's why men and women are different, and we need to be trained differently. And there's so many arguments about this. Can we train the same? We certainly can do a lot of things the same, but we need to slightly look differently at this. And when, you know, female athletes are trained on their cycle, because it's like, I think it's days 14 to 24. It's like that's the major training load should be there. So don't be afraid to beast them, you know. And I have clients who literally lie to me. They're like, Noah, you'll go easy on me if you know where my cycle is. And I'm like, yeah, but I'm going to hammer you in the next couple of weeks. So it's, you know, if you want, it's like that concept, get the score of the test completely correct so you can get the best result from your training.
Versus bluffing it and allowing your ego to fluff the scores so you're not entirely...
Pregnancy is a huge issue for breathing as well, so no breath holes for Emily. Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you.
Does everyone know?
They do now.
They do now. A lot of the breathe light techniques she can do. And I would really encourage that you implement that and actually practice breathe light on her. I do it with pregnant clients, and I train mainly pre and postnatal. But strong breath holds not advisable at all for
light,
pregnancy.
Right.
Breathe light and a lot of the normal breath holds that will, you know, increase functional breathing. And it also will get, it will calm her down and make her feel much better about training. So usually I have to really start with breathing when I've got somebody who's probably around the same time, 10 to 12 weeks. Yeah.
And I think as well for everybody is just slowing everything down in training will make them feel more comfortable. Like I think everybody, it just makes so much sense when you talk about, okay, if on your first desire to breathe, you suck in a big chunk of air, then you have to gonna breathe out heavier, then you're gonna create more demand for oxygen, you get into this vicious cycle of feeling really breathless.
Yes.
And I think the ever since I've started to try to be more mindful of staying calmer and say I've been able to do way more in a session or find training way more manageable and way less sort of like breathless just by thinking about breathing slower and breathing lighter and everything. And now people who haven't done any of this stuff and you train with them, is I'm doing workouts with people or next to people, and they're not less, they're fitter than I am, and I know they are, and I'm running next to them and all you can hear is and I'm struggling way more than they are, but then I'm barely breathing and I can talk to them and say, oh, like whatever, just because people are just breathing heavier, even though I'm sure they're having a much harder time than I am because of the breathing pattern as well. So I think regardless is just trying to slow it down and create. One thing that they did bring up in the book is talking about high intensity training. So you wouldn't necessarily, if you were playing a football match, you wouldn't only nasal breathe. Or if you were doing a competition,
exactly,
you were an athlete and you were going to game day and you were going to perform at your highest, or you train, even if you're doing CrossFit in the gym and you go to your competition, you wouldn't say only nasal breathe during this point.
No, never.
Because that's obviously...
We were not that stupid.
No, of course.
No, it's like at rest, all times during the day, nasal breathing, and then when we exercise for the most part, and then you have got to gasp and open your mouth, that will happen. And I love what you said when you said if somebody can't do a decent body weight squat, how are they going to squat with 200 pounds or 200 kilos? I saw you what did you clean the other day? Was it 327 kilos?
37 kilos. Pounds.
Okay, yeah, I was like, that was impressive.
Yeah.
So if somebody hasn't got the basics, then they can't overload.
Yeah.
And when you were talking about people running beside you in the gym, reminded me of I guess people wouldn't know about the hypoxic, hypercapnic intermittent training, and you can also do that here, where you remember we did the squats and the push-ups, but you can do that on a breath hold instead of, you know, I think in a CrossFit style they wouldn't really like you to go inhale down, exhale up, but you could give them exhale, and on the exhale you hold the breath. And the reason for that, guys, is that when you exhale, it is not hypoxic, hypercapnic if you're inhaling. So if you inhale and then you start to move with a breath hold, you've got air to work in your body.
Yep.
So you want to exhale. On the exhalation, you do the effort. And the effort, you can give them, you know, you can give them a set of push-ups. You can give them a set of something that's weighted and loaded rather than, you know, something like, I don't know, box jumps or wall balls or whatever. So then you can start employing hypoxic, hypercapnic training.
Yep.
And with your audience, you'll just have to, you know, get the buy-in. It's like I've had to get the buy-in from a lot of people. And it takes time. And it's like in anything with exercise, how you get people to buy into the method.
Yeah.
So yeah, and that can really improve over time. But I love also what you said, the person beside you who's breathing heavily, they're under way more pressure.
Yeah.
So this is where the pressure on the body is too great and on the system, because we're talking about blood flow to make contractile, you know, to make muscles contract and mitochondria fire in the body. And this is if somebody, this is where we start to look at the athlete will have a shorter span because their mitochondria is suffering. The buffering capacity is getting reduced because they cannot tolerate acidosis in the body, and the recovery time may take longer. So when we start to look at, like, everyone's wearing a whoop now, it's like, how long is their recovery time after exercise, what their HRV is, and there's a few other markers that really, you know, go deeply into that. So, you know, we want people to exercise in a healthful manner for as long as possible. And CrossFit, it's like, I think you've got a great place here, but I can imagine you've also come up against CrossFit's bad for you. It's like people get injured, but this is awesome that you've got your own center, and now you're telling everyone to breathe properly because it will negate injury.
And one thing about the whole CrossFit thing is you pointed it out, and I did another breathing course with the guys that Call Out Breathe In, who does Wim Hof stuff, and he said the same thing you said. Is for me, and this was kind of coming out of the biomechanics of breathing, is the very tight and very restricted through movement through my rib cage. And I was thinking about it afterwards, and I can feel it if I try and take a deep breath in. I'm very restricted about the amount of movement I've got through my rib cage, which is obviously going to then start limiting how much space I've got to take breaths in. Is we spend a lot of time creating pressure and tension, especially in the trunk and the midline, especially when we do something like CrossFit. So when we're trying to lift really heavy, you're telling people to brace really hard. And that's not make themselves as small as you can, but make themselves as big and braced as possible. Is that's probably going to start, at some point it's going to have like an adverse effect on breathing ability, and there's going to be some crossover. So then you start to look at, if I want to get really strong and I'm trying to train to create as much tension as possible, but in order to be able to be more aerobically fit and I'm trying to get fitter, I need the freedom in those muscles to be able to breathe deeper, is that there's probably going to be some balance point where it's beneficial, or it tips too far to one way and I'm going to end up inhibiting my ability to get fit because I'm too strong, or inhibitate my ability to get strong because I'm too free and unable to create as much tension. Does that make any sense?
Yes, it does. It makes perfect sense. And I don't think you'll have an inhibition, because the nervous system, like, you're already strong. We want your nervous system to let go a little bit. And, you know, the tissues around the rib cage and the thorax might need some work.
Right.
At loosening, you know, if you're finding the rib cage is not opening, and it's like you can use the belt for that breathing. But I don't think you'll lose power.
Okay.
I know when we get people nasal breathing, they have to drop performance to get that increase of, you know, being able to buffer.
That makes sense.
Under like less pressure because they feel they're suffocating. It is really good if you're in this industry like you are, I am, as opposed to someone who's just doing breathing, because now I recognize, okay, we've got to look at the thorax and the sternum and the rib cage. And I've had my own issues with that because I've been, you know, training for years and I've done a lot of stuff to my rib cage and sternum. So when we run out of room to work, it's like now we can start looking at, say, where the tissues are compressed. And that's why breathing pattern disorders, it's huge. And you might need an osteo or a physio to start working in some of those tissues, but you might find you really keep your strength. And because that's what I'm hearing, is you don't want to lose that strength. And the athletes will be, I don't want to lose.
Well, it's that, but it's more so is in order to get strong, is we cue a lot of people to create as much tension as you can. So that just sounds like, even saying it now, it sounds like it's not a great thing to encourage people to be doing. Like when you say more tension, but the reason you create more tension, it's a safety mechanism to get people to get stronger.
Because you've got to lift.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Versus where we were saying, right, release that tension and try and have more freedom through your spine. And I guess it depends on what your job. If you've got someone who needs to get stronger, we need more tension so they can move better.
And you can easily do 10 minutes of breathing after the workout to try and release some of that pressure. If they are only doing compressed training, it will become an issue.
Yes.
So this is where it's like you be really intelligent about your training, and really good athletes. It's like if a lifter thinks, oh, my core is taken care of because I lift, that you know, like really, really good lifters, they're doing, accessory work. They're doing proper anti-extension and rotation work in their core, and they're not so blindsided that they think it's all taken care of with just lifting.
Just
for general population, we can make your core stronger by loading up your movements, because they are only going to move those two or three times a week they see us. So for, if we want to get strong, the compression, I would, I always say, don't ever take away what someone wants to do. Mm-hmm. If you need that compression to lift heavy, you need that, and then you need to put your breathing on top of it. And blood flow, one of the things I didn't say, because we talked about that pillar of sleep, emotions, and breathing, with CV training and having, this is where the BDNF in the brain is released, and the studies show that cardiovascular training triumphs weight training in terms of getting BDNF to increase. And BDNF is brain-derived neurotrophic factor. It's like fertilizer for the neurons. It hence makes you feel better. Weight training through the studies has been proven to increase our self-esteem more. But if we want to start, and the only way to improve your bolt is actually by the time we've done all our breathing exercises, if you want to get to 40 seconds, you've got to exercise. And that means you're going to have to do CV training and be really smart about the type of intervals you do, and, not having your mouth open and your neck extended. So this is where it gets, and this is why one of the reasons I think CrossFit's great. You do all of it.
Yeah.
You don't just go, oh, this is the only thing we do.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not only aerobic. It's not only weightlifting, and you're not, there's a lot of methods out there going, you can't do this and you can't do that. It's like, come on.
Do it all.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the last question I've got for you, because I find people, and you were talking about earlier how people have to be bought in and willing and understand, and they've got all these tools and all these methods and all these prescriptions that people say, breathe out for 7 seconds and hold for four seconds and whatever. And that's obviously a really good tool as someone, if I want to reach as many people in the gym, I can say, breathe out for this long, breathe in for this long. But ultimately, if I say breathe out for 7 seconds, if the person's not breathing properly, that's not going to be as effective.
They'll have a pause. So if you breathe out for 7 seconds and they only breathe out for four, then you're going to have to pause them, hold them for that 3 seconds.
Sure.
What you could do for your cool down is put a big cadence, if you've got speakers, put a cadence on, a cadence counter, and do a 5-5. Breathe in for five, breathe out for five, and do it for a full 5 or 10 minutes, because that breath count of a 10-second breath with either 4 or 5 inhalation and 5 or 6 exhalation, the studies correlate to improved HRV with that slow breathing.
Okay.
So we want to slow down breathing. The ultimate goal is to improve the sensitivity of the baroreceptors, to improve the bolt so your body can tolerate more carbon dioxide, because that is the primary stimulus to breathe. So going right back to when the phrenic nerve, the root from the diaphragm to the medulla in the brain. So big cadence, that tick, tick, tick. And this, it's a primary measure of how much we can concentrate if we can actually stay focused on our breathing. And this is linked to cognitive performance, development, learning. And if that is if our cognitive, if we've got cognitive decline, this is, it's another major issue. We want our brains to actually stay alive and well.
So that'd be why I meditate quite, I try to meditate, but then I've started recently doing guided meditation. And one thing in common with all of them is, like, if you start to lose focus and concentration, pull it back to breathing, because then it's obviously something that you can stay present with and just focus on that, versus your mind wandering off about, oh, what am I going to do later and stuff like that. So I guess that's
how it's working. We can follow the breath in and out. It's like that takes, huge concentration.
Yeah.
So that's something you could try as a cool down and just lie everyone down. And generally people never say no to that. They love it. They really, really love it. It's like people have an inability to slow down or be still. And if we can get them to be still, they're uncomfortable with it first. I can see people squirming and like, you'll be fine, and then they're like, are we doing it again?
Yeah.
exercising gets easier. Training gets easier.
Amazing. Yeah.
So you said at the beginning, you said we'll cut it at 30 minutes if we get bored and we don't like it. But I think we're coming up to an hour,
We're at 55 now. And I think that was a great note to wrap it up on.
I'm going to mention one thing on sleep. This was something else I looked at. So we said assess your breathing. So breathe slow. Assess your breathing, how you sleep. Assess your breathing, how you exercise, how and when you're exercising, how your breathing is. Irregular sighing, if you're a mouth breather, and then with the sleep, in that book Treating Breathing Disorders, they have an extra questionnaire where you would be pointed towards a medical intervention. So they have, it's the Epworth Sleepiness Scale, and they have a situation and chances of dozing. So sitting and reading. So if you sit and read, what are your chances of dozing? And then you score yourself from 0 to 3. So I'll give the scoring first in case anyone's writing this down. 0 will be you never doze. Okay. 1 is a slight chance of dozing or sleeping. 2 is a moderate chance of dozing or sleeping. And 3 is a high chance of dozing or sleeping. So situation 1 is sitting and reading.
Right.
Score yourself. Watching television.
1.
Score yourself. Sitting inactive in a public place like a cinema or a meeting.
0.
Okay. Sitting as a passenger in a car for greater than an hour.
1.
Lying down to rest in the afternoon when circumstances permit.
1.
Sitting and talking to a companion. 0.
0.
Hopefully. Sitting quietly after an alcohol-free lunch.
1.
And the last one was in a car while stopped briefly in traffic.
0.
Okay, so if anybody is, scoring 1, 2, or 3, I haven't got the score here. So if you're scoring high on that, I should I'll put it in your notes. I'll send the notes to you, where you would need to see a medical practitioner. And we didn't even talk about alcohol, but this is a major issue for sleep.
I'm not in a rush.
Yeah. alcohol is a major disruptor to breathing and to sleep. Generally causes sleep apnea, and in brief periods it causes snoring. HRV will be really really affected from it, because it's just that nervous system, it's the deregulation. Mm-hmm. Food is an issue, and it's like, you know, it's not rocket science, less processed food. All that stuff about the pH and the acidity of food, don't go AWOL on that. It's like, eat your normal diet, but you need to look at things like, I guess, meat, coffee, dairy, but I'm caffeine addict. I love my coffee.
I was going to say,
and I eat meat, and it, you know, I think the major thing with food is that you're not overeating. It's like meals that are too heavy, taking in too much food at any one time, because your digestive system is under a lot of pressure. Your heart rate goes up, your body temperature goes up, breathing rate goes up after certain food, and you can literally assess whether you're, you know, intolerant to something instead of taking these silly tests that cost so much money. So food, alcohol, smoking is a no-no, and shisha, all of it, forget it. Somebody came once to a class, and there were a smoker trying to improve their breathing. It's like,
start.
Yeah. And it's, you know, some of these things, it's like when they hang on to their crutch. And with alcohol, it's like you really have to drink in moderation. But if I do this, can I do more of this? No, you can't. You've got to get, you know, be an adult.
Yeah.
Be an adult about these things. So food, alcohol, and then stress. When we get people to really slow down, they start to make better decisions about the people they want to be around, the work situations they want to be around, the projects they take on. It's better, easier to say no.
Yeah.
And stuff like anxiety, depression, panic disorder all start to decrease. So they don't. And also, I'll say in this country, because it's pretty relevant, the cost of trying to get a counselor or a psychologist or anything in the mental health field is astronomical.
Yeah.
And it is not covered by insurance for the most cases. Your minimum insurance policy might need to be 26 grand to get covered, or unless you're working in a company. Mm. So imagine somebody's presenting with some disorder that has given them anxiety, and they're trying to exercise to get rid of the, you know what, because we see it all the time, right? Yeah. People come for exercise when they've got mental health issues, and the cost of them seeing a practitioner is out of their scope or their budget. So breathing, start where you can, and you'll start to have a much better mental function.
That makes complete sense.
And thank God now you've got Zoom, and they can access these services online, because here I think you're looking at a minimum of $650-$750, and you know, if you're seeing a psychologist, it's long term. It's not, you know,
one session and done.
That's pretty major. And then also kind of working with anything in that field, like where we have sleep, breathing and emotions, they're all really expensive entities here. It's like, it's not cheap. So when I see people struggling, it's like, let's help you where we can. Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Whereas that was, I
probably spent more time with my mouth open than I should have during that episode, because that was awesome. Okay, I did the masterclass. You guys have got another one coming up.
There's one in Abu Dhabi next week, which will be great because I think it's females only. Okay. We get way more males on Oxygen Advantage than females because I think you just have this buy-in to like, this is hard.
Yeah.
And it is hard. It's like if you really want to improve your athletic capability, we've got all the tools to go right up. But like what we see at the moment is it's all just functional breathing. We have Patrick McKeown coming out in November.
In November, very excited for that.
18th and 19th, I think. It's a three-day course. Yep. So when you do that course with him, you'll be as qualified as me to give that masterclass.
Well.
And I will be a master instructor for him. He said, no, Rose, I want you to teach it. I said, no, Patrick, you've got... And it's his last travel. I don't know how I managed to... I've been working on this for 2 years, but I'm so happy he's coming. Because when you hear him in person... your mouth will be open.
Yeah.
So that's in November. There's a masterclass in Abu Dhabi next weekend. It's going to Egypt. I have to go over there to do another course. So they've said, can you do your breathing? And I said, yes. To people who are listening, please be mindful and just open to questioning the person who's teaching you when they say breath work. Mm. It's something that irritates me. it's like any fitness fad, you know, they jump on it. So breath work, and then they get you over breathing.
Yep.
Or they're not getting you to really adhere to the principles of science. Or they're looking at other lifestyle factors. So just make sure that, you know, if you're parting with your money, you're doing it with someone who's followed up on something that is backed by science, backed by studies, peer-reviewed studies. I have banks and banks and banks of studies from Patrick that he makes us read as his instructors. And, you know, I don't get through them all, but we've got science everywhere to back up what we're doing. And he's got, you know, he's worked with 7,000 people one-to-one. And he said there was, out of the 7,000, he said there was only... I think maybe 40 that needed surgery.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, we're talking about chronic breathing pattern disorders, asthma, you know, real, real health issues. So it works.
Do you do any one-on-one work with people?
I do. I do one-on-ones. Cool. And I love doing them because you get independence quite quickly. If they come to us, I would only do 3 or 4 sessions, give them tools, because this is something you learn to put into your lifestyle.
Yeah.
So it's like I do a lot of work with them in those 3 sessions, unless it's the only person that I chronically worked with one-to-one was a stroke victim. Okay. And that was super, it was really rewarding as an instructor, but I like to try and give somebody the tools and then let them run with it. Because if they come to me for breathing, they're usually already training. So it's like, okay, change this, this, and this. This is where the bolt should be, unless they're really, super anxious or really, really poor bolt score. I have to spend longer working with them. I also work online, did a lot of work with somebody in Singapore. She then moved to a high altitude area and her breathing improved.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because we've got that the hypoxic hypercapnic and we the simulation of altitude training.
Yes.
That's with all the mask and the breath holes that we were doing. Yeah. So, yeah, there's so much we haven't even spoken about.
I'm just looking now. Yeah. I was like, man, we could keep going and going and going. Yeah. I smell a second episode. Where can people go and find you, Rose? I want people to get in touch with you and come ask you more questions.
I have a website, but there's not a lot of breathing stuff on it. Okay. And I'm really poor at putting content out. I really admire people who get content out on social media because it takes so much time.
Hello@roseodonovan.com
is my email. And I'll put my details into your notes on
the
please
do. We'll
and yeah, that. They can find me anywhere in Dubai. And I guess we're online now as well.
Yes.
And then I'd say to listeners, like, go to places like Base 3 or Keith's place, where you know that
training
the owner is actually on board with breathing techniques. It's like if you come to a cycling class with me, you'll be told to hold water in your mouth in between an interval to get you breathing through your nose to lower the heart rate faster, because I don't particularly like seeing somebody it's like recover faster, smarter, more efficiently, and they do it. It's amazing. It's like, yeah, you won't have me cheerleading you on a bike.
So again, just validation for me telling everyone to shut their mouth, is this is the reason why. So.
Yeah. And then, you know, if the guys are there, just say, come on, nitric oxide. Keith did it the other morning. I went to his class in down in his gym, and he's like, erectile dysfunction. It's like, how far do you have to go to get people to buy in?
If that doesn't do it for you, then.
Exactly, yeah.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Rose. I'll put all the links to the show notes for everything we spoke about today.
Yeah, and enjoy the next 6 months of your first pregnancy.
Yes, and all the breathing we'll have to do for that, which I'm sure will come in handy.
Amazing. So listen to Craig if he tells you to close your mouth.
Thanks, guys. Have an amazing weekend, and we'll see you soon.